The Church of God, the Eternal, presents the 61st message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled, Just What Do You Mean, Faith Once Delivered? Given in Eugene, Oregon, May 6th, 2023.
It was almost exactly a year ago that I started a series on the Genesis creation. And I took you from May of 2022 up into August with 7 sermons reconfirming what we were taught concerning Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2. And then leading up to the fall festival last year, I got away from that. Didn't finish everything that I wanted to include to actually finish the series. So here I am, 8 to 9 months later, wanted to go back and finally finish it. Now, I made some promises. Well, in some of those sermons, I actually mentioned the fact that I wanted to go through and talk about the antagonist's viewpoint to what it is that we believe. In other words, to test our doctrine and our belief and interpretation of the Bible against those who vehemently oppose what we stand for. They consider it an absolute threat. So what I promised you was that I would actually take some of the arguments of those who oppose our view and look at them to see to what extent they're right or they're wrong about criticizing our belief. So I want to get into that today. I don't think I have any choice but to go back and to do a little bit of review just because it's been almost 9 months to catch us up. I don't want to spend any more time than necessary, but besides a review this afternoon, I also am going to get into some of that analysis of the detractors from what they call the gap theory. They ascribe to us as believing in the gap theory, meaning that there is a huge gap of time between what is spoken by God in Genesis 1, verse 1, and Genesis 1, verse 2. And so I agree with that. I don't have a problem with it being called the gap theory. If you remember, we were asking and answering the questions, what is the truth about creation? And specifically, what can we know about the events that happen in the first 2 verses of the first chapter of the Bible? What was taught by Herbert Armstrong? Does it matter? Well, again, this whole series, remember this, Genesis creation is a sub-series under the larger theories on just what do you mean the faith once delivered. So in that major series, this is the 61st message, by the way, in case anybody's keeping track. But this teaching concerning the creation work of God in Genesis was part of the faith once delivered. Now, some of you still might say, well, why does it matter? And in fact, I am very aware that there are a number who came out of, let's say, Protestant belief into the Church of God who still did not have an emphasis on this teaching concerning creation and whether, you know, there was an original creation that was destroyed and then recreated, or whether the earth has only existed as a planet for less than 6,000 years. And there are many who have come into the church thinking, well, what does it matter? It's not that big a deal one way or the other. And what I think I tried to show you in the first 7 sermons is that, yeah, it does matter. Because the answer to that question has everything to do with what you believe concerning what happened with Lucifer and the angels. That's why it matters. And that is a key part of the storyline that is a part of the faith once delivered concerning when did the first sin really take place. Most of these who believe that the earth is only less than 6,000 years old also believe that the very first sin that ever happened in the universe was perpetrated by Adam and Eve. So just understand that that's one of the conclusions. Now, do you believe that's important to understand? I think it is, because it dominoes into many other beliefs. So there's a lot of reasons why answering this question is important, and it's important for us to understand it. And that's why I've asserted to you, and I will continue to assert, that it is part of the faith, because it does matter in your understanding of what work did God do and the reasons why, and what ramifications it has for the work that he's doing with the human family. So what was taught by Herbert Armstrong? Why is this teaching part of the revealed faith? Why does it matter, if it matters? So in review, remember that I cited a lot from Mr. Armstrong's book, originally written in 1959, updated in 1973. That booklet was entitled, Did God Create a Devil? So this whole issue about angels and the angels that actually rebelled, Lucifer, who became Satan the devil, is integral in this whole storyline, which is why Mr. Armstrong's description of the Genesis creation was made especially in that booklet. And so it matters. So I cited from that booklet to confirm what the church taught. Again, and I emphasize this for a reason, I'm not telling you, when I'm giving you this interpretation about what we believe concerning Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2, this isn't John Brisby. I'm parroting, if you will, exactly what the old church used to teach. And the reason I put extra emphasis on that is the fact that even in spite of what I did to cite from these booklets, I had at least one person in months after I started releasing those sermons last year who came to me basically saying, I think you're all wet, my words, concerning this interpretation of these Hebrew words. Like, where did you get all of this? Like, you know, like I'm making up my own interpretation of these words. Tohu and bohu and haya and all of this. I'm like, time out. Did you pay attention to the fact that I'm quoting from the old church literature on every single thing that I'm giving to you? This didn't come out of my thinking, which is why it's a part of a series called Just What Do You Mean the Faith Once Delivered? It was part of an original teaching we believe came by God to his true church. And there's a reason that it's important, because it's foundational in a lot of other of our teaching. So I emphasize that again. So Genesis 1, verse 1 says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We believe that this was the description of God's original bringing into existence the planet that we call Earth. Now, likely also, everything in the universe. Now, scientists, they think the origin of the universe was a Big Bang, or at least that's been the philosophy up until, and maybe there's other, you know, ideas out there now, I just don't keep up with it. But the scientists acknowledge there was like some big event and that all matter suddenly appeared in the universe. I don't disagree with that. Maybe that's exactly how God did it, so that it wasn't just the creation of this planet we call Earth, but maybe all substance in the universe, including this solar system and this planet. Whatever it is, we believe Genesis 1:1 is speaking of that original bringing into existence of the matter. But then we believe that verse 2 is describing an event that happened maybe even millions of years later. Verse 2 says, the earth was, this I'm reading in the Old King James, the earth was without form and void. And there's where all the debate comes. How do you interpret? What does that mean? The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the water. So you're describing a snapshot in time where the earth is absolutely covered in water. There's no dry land at all, and it's dark. So was this, and this is what the young earth creationists, the YECs, believe, the ones who say that this earth is no more than 6,000 years old, and so we're only talking about that God originally created it with water covering the globe and then went right into the creation of everything else over the next 7 days. We believe the original creation was made perfect by God, and then it was destroyed. And what's being described in verse 2 is the aftermath of devastation that took place at some point in the past, even millions of years ago. What's the substantiation? Did God create the earth without form and void? Because these words, tohu and bohu, mean chaotic and confused. That's their literal translation. So did God create the earth chaotic and confused? Well, maybe. And then brought it out of that confusion? Or did the earth become chaotic and confused? Oh, well, there's the word haya, the earth was. And there's that Hebrew word which can be translated either was or became. And this was the substance of the original teaching in God's church, because it's the same word that's used, by the way, in Genesis 19:26, which is the description of Lot's wife, that Lot's wife was a pillar of salt. Did Lot fall in love with a pillar of salt and marry her? Or did he fall in love and marry a woman who then and later became a pillar of salt? Yeah, that's what the story in Genesis 19 actually tells us. So can the word mean either was or sometimes became? Yes, which means we don't know for certain, but it certainly allows the possibility that you can apply it to verse 2 in Genesis 1 that says the earth became chaotic and confused, not that it was originally created that way by God. And that's what we believe is true, citing also the fact that in Job 38:7, God said when the earth was created, the angels jumped for joy, in essence. All right, it was a big celebration when that initial creation happened. All right, so those were all some of the fundamental texts that were always used to explain it to members of the church. But what was the significance that I pointed out to you in those first seven messages? The really important aspect of this is the involvement of the angels. That's what matters. Jude verse 6. What was the first sin that happened? Really, the first being who ever sinned were Adam and Eve? Or did sin transpire before Adam and Eve were in the garden? These young earth creationists, the YECs, believe Adam and Eve committed the first sin. And then what they have to try and do is, because the Bible talks about, you know, Lucifer becoming the devil, and there are statements by Jesus Christ, so they have to take that in consideration. So what do? They say Satan's sin followed Adam and Eve's sin. How does that make any sense? He came into the garden to deceive Eve, didn't he? Wasn't that a sin in and of itself? So this whole idea of trying to force this philosophy to say Adam and Eve created the first sin, and therefore that's why everything went downhill. It becomes important not to us, but it becomes important to them when we get to their arguments, which is why I'm kind of laying the table, because we'll get into some of that before the end of the message today. But I'm telling you, this whole thing hinges on what you believe about when sin first entered in, not to the world, but to the universe. They think Adam and Eve committed the first sin ever, ever, ever in the universe. We don't believe that. Or at least the faith once delivered doesn't teach that. You'll make your own decision. What does Jude 6 say? The angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved an everlasting change in the darkness unto the judgment of the great day. So here, the evangelist was inspired to write something factual, because this is the word of God, not the word of a man, about what happened in antiquity. The question is, when did this event happen that he's describing? The angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation. What's this talking about? When did it happen? Kept not their first estate. That word in the Greek, estate, is the word principality. It's like a kingdom. It's an assignment. God gave these angels an assignment. Unless you believe the angels made their own principality and their own habitation. In other words, so a habitation is where you live. So did the angels go out and decide, oh, we like this place, I think we're going to set up our household here? Or do you believe that the angels were all under the authority of God who made them, and that God assigned them their habitation and gave them a responsibility? Who do you think made these decisions, angels or God? Hopefully, if you believe God gave the angels their assignment of a place to live and a responsibility of work to do, Then that's what this is describing. Otherwise, why else does the verse end by saying he's reserved them in everlasting chains unto judgment of the great day? There must have been some rebellion that took place. They were assigned a place to live and work to do, and they rebelled against it, and that's why they're under judgment of God. I think that's pretty straightforward. I don't hear these young earth creationists ever addressing Jude verse 6. So when did this happen? After Adam and Eve sinned? Really? And I'm not turning back again to Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, where you see the description of Lucifer and the king of Tyrus, which is symbolized, Satan the devil and his fall, if you will, his rebellion, where he went from being a glorious archangel to becoming a devil. But that's what that describes. The question is, when did it happen? So these young earth creationists believe that all that happened after Adam and Eve sinned first. So what came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, I'm not turning to the words of Jesus Christ, but what did he say to the Jews when he called them? He said, "You are of your father, the devil. He was a murderer from the beginning." In other words, so Christ's own words said, Lucifer, who became Satan, was the author of sin. So how are they? I don't hear them address that either. They seem to think Adam and Eve were the author of sin. No, they were not. So again, why does this matter? If you think this shouldn't matter, again, who sinned first matters. Because it also then goes to our teaching on human nature. Because what does the true church teach concerning human nature? That God intentionally took the rebellious mind of Satan and put it in man. What that implies, no, not what it implies, what it says outwardly is that Satan sinned first, and then God took that sinful, rebellious nature and thereafter put it intentionally in man so that we would have to overcome it. If you don't believe that Satan sinned first, then you don't even believe what we teach concerning human nature. Do you see how all this dominoes together? And all of a sudden, the teaching concerning the Genesis creation affects a lot of other doctrines. And that's just one example. What I told you in the previous series last year was that the missing dimension in this knowledge is church government. Because we're talking about God assigning a being, whoever, angel or man, a duty and a responsibility, and then whether they keep it or whether they rebel against it has everything to do with the storyline. So our belief very strongly is that God gave those angels that assignment long before human beings were ever created by God on the earth. And that it was the rebellion of Lucifer and those angels under him that then ultimately resulted in the destruction of the surface of the earth. In essence, what do we believe? God created the earth, put animals and plants upon it. It was a glorious paradise. It did not have human beings on it. But God then put Lucifer and all of those angels upon this earth. God made this earth, that perfect, glorious physical creation, their habitation, and gave them a charge as stewards to take care of it. And at some point, Lucifer decided that wasn't good enough for him, and he wanted to make himself equal with God. And that's what Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28 tell us. And so he created this rebellion to seek to displace God and make himself equal with God. Of course, God cast him back down to the earth. Why? Because that was his assigned habitation. In the course of that war in heaven, Lucifer's rebellion, the surface of this earth was destroyed. Now, whether that happened in the early parts or whether it was after he was cast back down and then in a fit, you know, like a little child throwing a tantrum, and I kind of picture that in my head, I'm not saying that it's right or not, but this idea that he makes this attempt, thinking in his mind, obviously he wouldn't have tried to war with God if he didn't think he could be successful. So he got a rude awakening when he found out, guess what? The God who made you really is much more powerful than you. You don't stand a chance. And boy, he got the result of it by being cast back down. So he couldn't win against God at his throne. So what did he do? He threw a tantrum and destroyed everything he was supposed to take care of. Isn't that what the mind of Satan does? If God says up, Satan says down. If he says left, Satan says right. If God says take care of this earth, then he says, no, I'll do the opposite. I'll destroy it. Or did it just happen, you know, in the aftermath or in the midst of this rebellion of the angels, fighting with other angels? I don't know. The only thing we need to know is that the earth, the surface of the earth, was obliterated. A perfect, glorious, physical creation on this earth, including animals and plants, then was absolutely wiped out. The dry land disappeared underwater. The atmosphere became poisonous and blotted out the light of the sun. So I took 7 sermons last year to actually show you what we call the recreation of a destroyed planet. When God set his hand, starting in Genesis 1, verse 2, then in verse 3, to actually creating life on this earth and cleaning the atmosphere and bringing dry land and putting creatures on it, that was not the original creation of the planet. It was a recreation work to restore the beautiful planet that had already existed, maybe even millions of years before that, which is where the dinosaurs come in. And the other reason I wanted to do a few more sermons on this topic is because I promise, and some of the young people want me to talk about dinosaurs. And I promised I was going to talk about dinosaurs, and I haven't done that yet. So we are going to do that, because there's a number of articles in the old church literature in the course of answering these questions about the Genesis creation that go into pretty deep dive on the geological history of the earth, including the skeletons of the dinosaurs. So it needs to be addressed, and we need to have an answer for it. The young earth creationists have a problem with dinosaurs, or at least some very tortured explanations for why those skeletons are there and what it means. We don't, as I'm going to show you. So this rebellion of Satan involved principality, an assignment by God. That's all it is. There was a kingdom established on this earth. God put the angels in charge of it. That's why it's called a principality here in Jude 6. They didn't do what they were supposed to do by their boss. And they left their own habitation because they went up to try to take it away from God. And he cast them back down. So that's our belief, and is absolutely supported by the Bible, by the way. Satan is the god of this world. So there's another doctrine. How is Satan, and Jesus Christ confirmed that Satan is the god of this world. The Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 4:4 confirmed Satan is god of this world. How did he get there? You got to answer that. Did God wait until Adam rebelled and sinned, and then right afterwards Satan rebelled and sinned, and then God assigned him to be the god of this world? Does that make sense to you in the order? Or had God already assigned Lucifer as a glorious archangel to a principality to take care as a steward over this earth? Yes. And then the only factor that matters is the fact that after the rebellion of Satan, God didn't take away that assignment of the principality. Satan still has that assignment. Even though he's in absolute rebellion against it, God has not replaced him yet. He is still the god of this world. He still has a throne. It's the throne that Jesus Christ is going to take away from him when he returns at the appointed time. See, all of those doctrines dovetail together. And if you don't believe that Satan was the first one to sin, then you have a problem with a lot of doctrines of the Church of God. That's why it matters. So the rest of Genesis 1 describes a recreation. And it was always in God's intent for the earth to be a habitat for mankind, who were going to be created as the future children of God. They were the ones that were made in the image of God. Even though he did not put them on the earth yet at the time of the original creation, it was always his purpose to do so. It is impossible to understand the truth of Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2, if you do not understand the role of magistrates that God has assigned to rule over the earth. By understanding the role of Lucifer, the result of his rebellion, we have a basis for understanding why the earth became chaotic and confused after it was initially created perfect and beautiful. There's a synopsis. the reason why this doctrine is important. All right, let's begin with that to answer the detractors. That's what I'm calling them, the ones who disagree with us. And in fact, they consider what we believe, they call it the gap theory, they consider it heresy. They really hate it. So let's go through some of their arguments just to see if they hold water. These are ones who deny that the Bible, they think that we deny that the Bible can be trusted to say what it says. They think we're twisting the scripture. They don't believe that the gap theory, as they call it, is plausible at all. Recall that Christians, quote unquote, are assigned to be either old age creationists or young earth, old earth creationists or young earth creationists. Those are the two. So they try and put us in a category. You either believe that the earth might be millions of years old, or you believe that the earth is only about 6,000 years old. So that's the first way they want to pigeonhole you. Are you an OEC or a YEC? Well, guess what? According to that standard, we're OECs. We are old earth creationists because we believe it is very possible that the planet itself is millions of years old. Okay, we'll let them categorize us. They say that the gap theory believers, they count as being OECs, so we're OECs, but however, we reject much of what the other old earth creationists believe. We don't have very much in common with them, except for believing that the earth might be millions of years old. Why? Because many of these other deceived people who happen to believe in an old earth also have a lot of falsehood, including the idea that there were other beings on the earth, human-like beings, prior to Adam. We don't believe that. We believe Adam and Eve were the first human beings who were created by God on the earth. There were no pre-Adamic people. These other old earth creationists also believe that the description of the 7 days of creation is theoretical, that it's not literal. It wasn't 24 hours literally in 1 7-day week with 24-hour days. God brought it all into existence. They believe this is a description that every day may have been an eon of time, like an epoch, that lasted thousands of years, moving from one to the other. Well, that's all nonsense, all right? But you see, if they pigeonhole you as being an old earth creationist, then they also try and tag you with a lot of these other falsehoods that the other OECs believe. You can't do that with us. We don't believe it. In that regard, we have a lot in common with the YECs, the young earth creationists. What? Because we believe what Genesis 1 and 2 describes was a recreation or a creation work which God did literally in 7 days. That's what they believe is true. So do we. So we have elements of both. In other words, we don't fit the mold. And that drives them crazy too. Well, they just literally don't address us. I'm sure they probably did address Herbert Armstrong somewhere in this because he was a big proponent of this in the 20th century. But let me read to you from an internet article by a man named Bob Strauss. I tried to just pick out a good sample of what these arguments are to allow you to test those who hate what we believe and then see if they have, you know, anything going for them. This is from a website, www.thethoughtco.com, an article by Bob Strauss entitled, "Can Christians Believe in Dinosaurs?" And the short answer is he thinks not. He thinks true Christians, and this is not a man who ascribes himself to fundamentalist Christianity, as you're going to find out. So he says, if you believe in that the Bible is literally true, then you have a problem with geology and with science. Now here's his conclusion. Let me read. He says, "Can fundamentalist Christians believe in dinosaurs? The main thing that distinguishes fundamentalists from other types of Christians is their belief that the Old and New Testaments are literally true, and thus the first and last word in any debate concerning morality, geology, and biology." Well, stop right there. That includes you and me, right? We believe that every word in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation is true, that it's the Word of God. And so I guess he would call us fundamentalists. He goes on to say, while most Christian authorities have no trouble interpreting the 6 days of creation, quote unquote, in the Bible as figurative rather than literal. Okay, so this is what he wants. He says all these other non-fundamentalist Christians are willing to interpret Genesis 1 and 2 as if, oh, that wasn't really 7 24-hour days. That was just a figurative kind of thing God put out there. Because after all, the earth is millions of years old, so it can't be the way that's interpreted literally. While most Christian authorities, he says, have no trouble interpreting the 6 days of creation in the Bible as figurative rather than literal, for all we know, each day, quote unquote, may have been 500 million years long. Fundamentalists insist the biblical day is exactly as long as a modern day. That's what you and I believe. That it is approximately 24 hours, and that's what's being described in the first chapters of Genesis. He says, combined with a close reading of the age of the patriarchs and a reconstruction of the timeline and biblical events, this leads fundamentalists to deduce an age for the earth about 6,000 years. So the young earth creationists, yes, that's what they believe. He would call us fundamentalists, but we don't believe the earth is only 6,000 years old. So he doesn't really address the gap theory. He goes on to say, needless to say, it's extremely difficult to fit creation and dinosaurs, not to mention most of geology, astronomy, and evolutionary biology, into that brief a time frame. And he's right about that. If you believe the planet truly is only 6,000 years old, then you have a hard time trying to reconcile that belief with the geology and the astronomy. Evolutionary biology, well, we don't buy that anyway. He says, fundamentalists propose the following solutions to this dilemma, and he puts it in three categories. In other words, how do fundamentalists answer the dinosaur question? Number one, dinosaurs were real, but they lived only a few thousand years ago. So this is one category of these YECers. Believe dinosaurs were real because you got the skeletons they're digging up to prove it. So they can't deny, but they believe, and so they have to believe that those dinosaurs were part of the 6 days of creation work. Just at the same time that Adam and Eve were created. Okay, so then why don't we see dinosaurs? So they say they were created in the same week that Adam and Eve were created, but they've since become extinct. Okay, this is one philosophy. This man interprets it and says this is the most common solution to the dinosaur problem, quote unquote. Stegosaurus, Triceratops, and their ilk roamed the earth during biblical times and were even led two by two onto Noah's Ark or taken aboard as eggs. He says, in this view, paleontologists are at best misinformed and at worst perpetrating an outright fraud when they date fossils to tens of millions of years ago, since this goes against the word of the Bible. Yeah, there are a big chunk of these fundamentalist Christians, quote unquote, who believe that those dinosaur bones are less than 6,000 years old. And so what they have to say is, regardless of what the geologists say, they're either lying or else they're just misinformed. Now, we believe a lot of fossils, they don't have any clear way to date fossils, especially when they try and date the fossils of human beings or ones that they claim are human ancestors, whatever that is. But when it comes to dinosaurs, don't have a problem. We don't have a problem with it. So that's category number one, he says, are these fundamentalists that admit the dinosaurs existed but say that they're extinct now. And their skeletons are not any more than 6,000 years old. Category two, he says, are those who say dinosaurs are real and they're still with us today. Dinosaurs are real and they're still with us today. He says, how can we say dinosaurs went extinct millions of years ago when there are still Tyrannosaurus roaming the jungles of Africa and Plesiosaurus shadowing the ocean floor? This line of reasoning is even more logically incoherent, he says, than the others, since the discovery of a living, breathing Allosaurus wouldn't prove anything about A, the existence of dinosaurs during the Mesozoic era, or B, the viability of the theory of evolution. In other words, he's saying Even if you prove that there were, you know, there was a Tyrannosaurus Rex wandering in the Congo, how would that prove when they were originally created? Or anything else? This one reminded me because years ago, I think in the very first year we had a teen summer camp in 2002 down in Texas, and one of the outings that we did, I went with the teens on this, was to this Creation Science Museum. And it was this park where they actually had a number of dinosaur footprints in the rock. But they also had a building where they had, you know, the exhibits, and they were, and this was a fundamentalist Christian organization. And so I remembered literally they had an exhibit where they were touting the fact that dinosaurs have been spotted in Africa. You know, and I laughed at it because it's the same kind of thing like the Loch Ness Monster or Sasquatch or Yeti. Oh, yeah, there's witnesses who have seen them, but they couldn't make their camera work. The only image they got was blurry, so you can't prove it. But we know it's true. This is the philosophy of these fundamentalists who believe there truly is a remnant of these big creatures like T-Rex or Brontosaurus or whatever else still wandering in the jungles today. We just haven't been able to get it on film yet. It's not true. And this man's making a mockery of it. By the way, he's setting up a straw man, which means you paint your adversary as being like whatever, and then you knock it down, and that's supposed to discredit him, but it's his creation. That's not what we really are. So you can't knock down our belief by criticizing something we don't believe. But that's what he's trying to do here. All right, so then the third category. So you've got the ones who believe dinosaurs were real, but they are extinct. The second category, and there are these that are out there, dinosaurs are real and they're still with us today. Third category, he says, the fossils of dinosaurs and other prehistoric animals were planted by Satan. Now this maybe is the smaller category, but there are fundamentalist Christians who actually believe this is true. His description says this, this is the ultimate conspiracy theory. The evidence, quote unquote, for the existence of dinosaurs was planted by no less an archfiend than Lucifer to lead Christians away from the one true path to salvation. Granted, he says, not many fundamentalists subscribe to this belief, and it's unclear how seriously it's taken by its adherents, who may be more interested in scaring people into the straight and narrow than stating the unadorned facts. So he's pretty glib, you know, and dismissive. And I would be too, because this is just other nonsense to say, but this did come out, by the way, years ago, when geologists started to discover the skeletons of dinosaurs, then all of a sudden they had to be addressed. How did they get there? Where are these creatures? When did they roam the earth? So there was this whole section of fundamentalist Christianity that began to say it was a lie that Satan planted dinosaur skeletons in order to try to denigrate the truth of the Bible. So they had no other explanation for it and just said Satan did it. Well, really? So Satan had the power to create? No, he doesn't. That's another one of our fundamental beliefs, by the way. Satan has no authority by God to create anything, including a dinosaur skeleton. So when they ascribe Satan a power that is only God power, they're actually speaking heresy. Satan did not create dinosaurs or dinosaur skeletons and then plant them in the earth to throw us off the trail and think the Bible was a lie. Oh, that whole thing is absurd. But there are those who believe it, and so it gives us all a bad name. If you believe every word of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation is the true word of God, then they'll try and paint you with these kind of ideas. Doesn't hold water. He goes on, this author says, how can you argue with a fundamentalist about dinosaurs? So his conclusion, either because he says they all fall into category one, two, or three, and we fall into none of them, by the way. But he calls us fundamentalists, but we don't fall into any one of those. He says, how can you argue with a fundamentalist about dinosaurs? The short answer is, you can't. Today, most reputable scientists have a policy of not engaging in debates with fundamentalists about the fossil record or the theory of evolution because the two parties are arguing from incompatible premises. Scientists, he says, gather empirical data. Oh, I love it when they trot this out. Scientists gather empirical data, fit theories to discovered pattern, change their views when circumstances demand, and boldly go where the evidence leads them. Yes, scientists are so dependable. They always follow the evidence, don't they? That's what this man claims. He says fundamentalist Christians, by comparison, are deeply distrustful of empirical science and insist that the Old and New Testaments are the only true source of all knowledge. These two worldviews overlap exactly nowhere, he says, end quote. Well, he's right in part. But he's wrong to say that we believe that science and empirical facts from geology can't be trusted. That's not our belief at all. A lot of fundamentalist Christians, quote unquote, out there may believe that. What do we believe? This address, what he's saying addresses what I'm calling the YEC philosophy only, the young earth creationist philosophy. They're the ones that have the problem with dinosaurs and have to come up with an explanation. We don't. Let me prove that to you from the Ambassador College booklet entitled Answers from Genesis, published in 1973. Now, this is a pretty condensed booklet, and it was all written in terms of a question and answer, just to put some of these things together. And so I think this is a succinct way to get this out. What is our answer to this issue about supposed contradictions between science and the Bible? Here's our doctrine, by the way, expressed in this 1973 booklet. The question, and it's in question answer format, would you associate God with science and why? And here's the answer. The word science comes from the Latin word scientia, meaning knowledge. What we call science seeks to know, explain, and classify knowledge of the material universe. God, the creator of the heavens and the earth, is also the creator of true science. In his word, God in his word encourages man to study the true sciences. And then he cites John 17:17, which says, "For the invisible things of him," meaning God, "from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." The citation goes on to say, Scripture also says, "Thy word is truth," John 17:17. Hence, there is no conflict between true science and the true teaching of the Bible. So that's our doctrine. We don't have to say Satan planted the dinosaur skeletons because we can't explain them, and it contradicts our belief that the dinosaurs can't be any more than 6,000 years old. We don't have that problem. We believe that the actual empirical evidence from physical geology absolutely supports the truth of the Bible. Not true with many of these fundamentalist YECs. While I'm in this 1973 booklet, I want to read the next one to you as well, because this is valuable. This question says, could you please help me with something that has me confused, really confused, from the time God created the heaven and the earth until now is about 6,000 years. How then do they find trees and fossils that are claimed to be millions and millions of years old? Why did God have to create the earth if all these things were here? Please help me to clear this up. Here's the answer. According to the biblical chronology, God created Adam and Eve a little less than 6,000 years ago. However, biblical and geological evidence make it clear that the earth itself, not man, has existed for a longer time. There's our doctrine synoptically, but I'll keep reading just because it's interesting. It goes on to say, the key to comprehending this little-known fact lies in the correct understanding of Genesis 1:1-2. Something tremendous is indicated to have occurred between what is stated to have been the original creation of the earth, verse 1, and the statement in verse 2, quote, and the earth was, or as it could be better translated, had become without form, tohu, and void. The Hebrew word tohu means ruin, confusion, emptiness. See any Hebrew English lexicon. Yet Isaiah 45:18 shows that God did not create the earth in vain. Same Hebrew word as tohu. So something occurred between Genesis 1:1, the original creation of the earth, and Genesis 1:2, which introduces the creation week. What occurred between events and conditions described in these two verses is revealed in other Bible passages. What is described in the seven 24-hour days of Genesis 1, verses 2 through 31 is actually a new creation and a restoring to order. See Psalm 104, verse 30. God made the earth a fit habitation for man, unquote. So there's the doctrine synoptically stated. Okay, so this philosophy, again, these who hate it call it the gap theory. That's what they say you and I believe. I'll accept that. This philosophy is counted by the young earth creationists as a sellout to godless scientists attempting to find compromise. So they believe we're selling out to the scientists because we give the scientists any credit whatsoever to having facts concerning the age of certain plants and animals and saying that, yes, the earth is a whole lot older than 6,000 years old. So I found this one online source. Again, I was looking for sources that kind of condense their arguments so it's easier for us, because you can get knee deep, neck deep in this stuff. I'm trying to keep this as simple as possible. So here's an organization called Rivers of Hope. And this is an article online that they entitled The Ruin and Reconstruction of Creation. This is another name, by the way, for the gap theory. They also refer to it as the ruin recreation or the ruin reconstruction theory. Okay, that's what we believe, right? A perfect created earth was ruined and then recreated by God. I'll accept that, the ruin and reconstruction of creation. So now is a subtitle in this article entitled Dating the Gap Theory. Now this is interesting because they go back and say, when did this gap theory first come on the scene? Number one, I'm going to tell you it wasn't with Herbert Armstrong. So let me just read what they write synoptically here. This Rivers of Hope group says, quote, the gap theory is not a new theory. It was first introduced in 1814 by Scottish theologian Thomas Chalmers in an attempt to reconcile the six-day biblical creation account with the newly defined geologic ages being set forth by leading geologists of that era. The gap theory, they say, became quite popular among evangelical Christians in the early part of the 20th century, largely because it debuted in the study notes of the Scofield Reference Bible, published in 1917. More contemporary proponents of the gap theory were well-respected Bible teacher Dr. Vernon McGee, as well as Pentecostal televangelist Benny Hinn and Jimmy Swaggart, unquote. So if you think this was started by Herbert Armstrong, no, it was not. So again, a belief in the destruction, the ruin of an original created earth and the reconstruction was not originated by Herbert Armstrong. But we have it as part of our belief that it's part of the faith once delivered. Why? Because we believe it's true. And there is something that still makes people choke. Members who come into the church and they think, well, if Herbert Armstrong was truly God's servant, then he had to be the originator of everything that we believe. No, he doesn't. The world is full of knowledge, quote unquote, that is a mixture of truth and error. So we never believed, and Herbert Armstrong never claimed that he was the originator of the Sabbath. That's one of the things that Joseph DeKotch of the later Worldwide Church of God that became whatever they called it, after Mr. Armstrong's death, in his book, tried to criticize and downplay and ridicule Mr. Armstrong's teachings by saying, Mr. Armstrong wasn't the first one to teach the Sabbath. Yeah, no duh. And he never claimed to. His autobiography shows that there was an elderly woman who was already keeping the Sabbath that influenced his wife. Herbert Armstrong didn't originate belief in that you're supposed to keep the seventh day Sabbath. By Christians? Not at all.
He also didn't claim to have originated the belief concerning British Israel. That's what the claim is. Oh, he plagiarized J.H. Allen. The knowledge was there, and in fact, J.H. Allen's book was required reading by Ambassador College students. He wasn't hiding it, plagiarizing it. I hope nobody, you know, found out about the other book. It was part of the curriculum for college students in the 1950s. It was in the college library. So all of that's just nonsense. So what was the value of the ministry of Herbert Armstrong? Not that he originated everything we believe is true, but God led him to sift out the error from the nuggets of truth and put together the picture that explains the Bible as no other religion does. That's what we have, my dear friends, in what we believe in all the doctrines. Mr. Raymond Cole used to say that actually overwhelmed him as a young man when he was called and saw that all of that truth from Genesis to Revelation fit together like a perfect tapestry, every piece in its perfect slot. And it wasn't because every bit of that wisdom was new or not taught by someone else previously, but Herbert Armstrong was the only one to put it together in its current configuration. A sideline, getting off on a tangent, what's the one doctrine that was originated? Well, there are several of Herbert Armstrong that you won't find in any other religion. Belief in the God family plan, that your hope is to be born into the God family. You were created in the image of God to become God as God is God. Find that in another church, by the way. So if you're going to attach yourself to the idea that Herbert Armstrong didn't have anything going except he copied a lot of other people, then you tell me where he got that doctrine. And it's ironic to me that there's a number of people who I've dealt with over the years who believe that is true, and they have this hope that they're going to be born into the God family, to be God is God, with Jesus Christ as their older brother, which the Bible says, and yet they want to denigrate and say Herbert Armstrong didn't have any special wisdom by God. Oh yeah? Then you better give up that doctrine. No one else taught it except this man you now have decided wasn't inspired by God. So if Herbert Armstrong wasn't used by God, then you better give up your belief that you're going to become God. What now are you going to believe about your future? You're going to be an angel? What are you going to be, if anything? You see, you can't keep some and cherry pick what you want to believe. So no, we don't believe Herbert Armstrong originated the belief about the gap theory. As this author says, it started all the way back in the early 1800s. Why? Because that is when geologists first started digging up dinosaur bones. That's when they found the first bones of these huge creatures that aren't anywhere on the earth today. And there had to be an explanation for how old and when were these things on the earth and how old are they. And all of a sudden it threw Christianity into a tither, because mostly up until that point, Christians, quote unquote, believed that the earth was only 6,000 years old or less. This new geological evidence of dinosaur bones in the early 1800s challenged that directly. So what this author is saying is, hey, this gap theory's been around since the early 1800s, and it only came up as a knee-jerk reaction to the discovery of dinosaur bones. In other words, what they're saying is, if you have real faith in the Bible, then you don't need to explain the geology. You just believe that it's true that the earth is only 6,000 years old, regardless of what these scientists say. Well, we don't have to do that, because as I already read you from our doctrine, we believe that true science, including the real record of geology, absolutely supports the truth of the Bible. It's not contradictory at all. We have no problem with it whatsoever in our belief. So there were a number. So did Herbert Armstrong, was he influenced by the Schofield's notes in the Schofield Bible? I'll bet that's where he got it, along with these others during the early 20th century who were embracing the gap theory. I'm very sure Herbert Armstrong became exposed to that and then weighed it in the balance with God's inspiration to say, is it true or is it not true? God guided him to say, yep, that's the right explanation for it. There's a gap in time between what God chose to put in Genesis 1 verse 1 versus what is in Genesis 1 verse 2. Here's the next
back to that Ambassador College booklet, Answers from Genesis in 1973, here's another one that dovetails. Here's the question: how do we know how many hours were in a whole day at the time of the creation week? And here's the answer. It starts a theistic evolutionist. Let me stop right there. Theistic evolutionists were actually old earth creationists. Okay, there are ones that believe that you can't take what is said about the 7 days of creation literally, that it could have been thousands or millions of years that this creation week, quote unquote, occurred. And so our booklet is addressing this false old earth creationist philosophy. All right, we're old earth believers, but not this falsehood. It says theistic evolutionists and even theologians often say that the days, quote unquote, described in the first chapter of Genesis are really epochs of time, each perhaps representing a thousand or more years in length. A look at the creation account and a simple knowledge of nature clearly shows how long they were. What's our evidence? Keep reading. Notice that plants were created on the third day. But the sun did not shine in full strength on the earth's surface until the fourth day. If these days, quote unquote, were thousands of years long, then how could the plants have survived all that time without sunshine? Yeah, good question. So the plants were created on one day, quote unquote, that's thousands of years before the sun shows up. So how are these plants living? Furthermore, it says the insects which pollinate many of these plants were not created until the sixth day. Each day of creation week is not some long epoch, but exactly what the scripture says, a day and night of 24 hours. Each day is an evening and a morning, that is, a nighttime and a daytime. A more complete study of this subject, it says, is available in our free reprint article, How Long Were the Days of Creation? If you haven't read that one, I recommend you go out. You can find that on the internet, by the way. It was one of the articles that I've used as a resource for this series that I'm giving you now. Okay, so that's what we believe. We believe the earth was old, but we do not believe the falsehood that these old earth creationists typically embrace. So we have something in common with both groups. All right, these YECers, young earth creationists, hate the gap theory for many reasons, and here's a source that lists six of them. Number one, they claim, this is what they say about us believing in the gap theory or ascribed to us. They claim, they say, that the destruction of the original world is proof of God's divine judgment against someone's sin. No, we don't. Not in the way they're thinking it. They go on to say, they claim that Adam committed the first sin so animals of an earlier creation could not have been judged as guilty of anything. They ask, who destroyed the earth, God or Satan? So here's the challenge to, if you believe in the gap theory, they're going to say, you believe that that God destroyed the earth prior to Adam and Eve being created on the earth? And they're claiming that only sin results in destruction or judgment of God. They say, why would God allow Satan to do that? They claim that there was no death of any kind before Adam's sin. That's what these young earth creationists believe, that there was no death of any kind before Adam's sin. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men, a citation of Romans 5, verse 12. So they use Romans 5, 12 to say Adam and Eve were the first ones to sin. And so if it's true that God created a perfect, glorious earth, plants and animals, and then either destroyed it or allowed it to be destroyed, sin was involved. What did the animals do to deserve it? That's basically what they're saying. Their claim is that no one sinned before Adam and Eve. I already answered that question. Was there sin before Adam and Eve? Yeah, it was Lucifer. It was Lucifer and those who became fallen angels. It was the sin of angels that resulted in the destruction of the earth. It wasn't God's judgment upon the earth. This is where they're wrong. They try and again pigeonhole our idea. Well, destruction would only happen if God is zapping them with a lightning bolt, and there was no sin in order for God to want to zap.
That's how I'm going to summarize what they're claiming. Wrong. My answer is, it was the sin of Lucifer and those one-third of God's angels who followed him into rebellion that resulted in the destruction. God didn't pass judgment on his physical creation on the earth. Is he responsible for the destruction of the earth's surface? Yes. Why? Because he has all power and he lets Satan do it. Which is, by the way, the end concept of that entire booklet I quoted to you, Did God Create a Devil? The answer in the back at the very end of the book is, no, God did not create a devil. He created a perfect, glorious archangel who, using his free moral agency, chose to rebel and became a devil. But is God responsible for the existence of a devil in the universe? Yes. Why? Because he knew the end from the beginning. And he knew when he brought that being into existence that ultimately he would choose himself to become a rebel. So God could have prevented there from being a devil, because he knew the end from the beginning. The fact that he didn't stop it, God's responsible for the existence of a devil in the universe. But did he pass judgment? Did God pass judgment upon the physical creation? All those poor little animals? And the T-Rex and the Brontosaurus and the Stegosaurus? No. Was sin involved of the physical creation? No. What they're trying to do is pin death to sin. Is all death a result of sin? No, only for human beings. This is the part they don't get. Death of animals and plants has nothing to do with sin. Only secondarily. I use the example, by the way, too. Now, yes, it may be true that there were not carnivores in the animal kingdom when God first created it. When Jesus Christ returns, indications are the animals aren't going to be carnivores anymore. Maybe that's the way it started out. But when a fox eats a rabbit, is sin involved? Did the rabbit commit a sin, and therefore that's the only reason it died? No. God created the physical ecosystem to have predators and, you know, animals that are eaten. It's not sin involved in it. Those animals are doing exactly what God gave them to do by instinct. It's not sin. Sin only enters in when you're dealing with two categories of beings. What are they? Angels and human beings, not animals and plants. So this is one of the places where they're really off. They want to say, oh, the fact that God allowed the original creation to be destroyed, who sinned? Not the animals, but the angels did, in fact. All right, here's point number two where they try and attack the gap theory. Oh, well, I've already kind of stepped on a little bit. Plants and animals. They say that the gap theory teaches that the plants and animals of the previous world were destroyed and fossilized. Yeah, we believe that. This means, they say, that they could not be genetically related to the plants and animals of the present world. Well, wait a minute. How did you get that leap? This means, they said, that they could not be genetically related to the plants and animals of the present world, yet the majority of the fossilized plants and animals are identical in form to their modern counterparts. How can this be without any direct line of descent? Here's my answer. The same great God who created the original plants and decided to create the same kind of plants a few million years later, and they link up. Yeah, can he do that? Yeah. So the alternative is to say that they're going to put a limit on God and say, well, he couldn't have made those plants to actually be related. Yeah, he could. They can be exactly the same. And in fact, to have all the markings of one to the other, even if they were separated and bringing into existence by millions of years. Who's going to put a limit on God? I think this is the most absurd argument. This is one of their arguments against the gap theory. All right, what's the next one? Item number three, they call it God's failure. In essence, they believe that we believe God failed. They say that the gap theory must also assume there was a prior creation lasting millions of years that closely resembled the present creation. This creation, however, ended in failure. This is what they think you believe. This creation, however, ended in failure. The animals of the previous creation did not fulfill God's original purpose. So he destroyed them. Is that what you believe? It's not what I believe, but this is what they ascribe to you. They go on to say, in addition, in the second creation, or what we call the recreation, God made the plants exactly like the first ones. Furthermore, since Adam and Eve were the first man and woman, this prior creation lacked God's crown of creation, humanity. Therefore, they say, the gap theory would have God failing twice. First, his purpose was not accomplished in the animal and plant kingdom. Second, he failed to crown his creation with man. This is inconsistent with God's nature, one that does not fail to accomplish his purposes. Do I even need to answer that one? It is our belief that a purposeful God intended always to put man on the earth. That's why it was created, but according to his perfect timing. Now, they're trying to pass judgment. They're trying to dictate to God when God has to do whatever he does. So their conclusion is that if God didn't put man on the earth when he first brought it into existence, that God was a failure. We don't believe that at all. We believe this God created the earth, knew that it was going to be destroyed because he knew the end from the beginning. And this was also folded into his perfect plan, the need to recreate it and to put man on it. And in fact, it's very likely the reason it could have been, we just don't know, the reason that Lucifer rebelled. Knowing that God had created it as a habitation for human beings to become God members, and he wasn't going to be given that chance. He was created as an angel. The angels are the servants to the God family. They can never be more than that. He was going to create these lowly human beings with the potential of being born to be God as God is God. Is it possible that Lucifer was jealous of that, which is why he rebelled? Very possibly. Well, the earth was created originally with the intent of a habitation for man. Lucifer was put in charge of it, likely resented it, and said, I'm not going to play second fiddle to these people that he intends to create on the earth. I'll just destroy it. How does that make God a failure? It doesn't. God took it all into consideration in the timing of how we unfolded it. So those are the first three points of their arguments against the gap theory. There's three more. I'm going to read through these quickly because these are the ones we're going to analyze in more detail as we go forward. The final three points of argument will set the stage for our focus in the next message. So point number four is they claim the gap theory contradicts modern unbelieving geology. In other words, so they think the geologists are, you know, automatically anti-God and anti-Bible. Well, a lot of them may be personally. But here's what they say. Although gap theorists attempt to harmonize Genesis with modern geology, the proposed harmonization will not work. Modern geology is based upon the idea of uniformitarianism. All processes that we observe today have continued at the same rate from the beginning. Since, they say, listen to this, since the present rates are the same as the past, there is no room for a worldwide catastrophe. The geological ages cannot be separated from the theory of evolution. That's their conclusion. They're saying if you believe in the gap theory, then you are an evolutionist. No, we are not. So the question is going to be, and this is why we're going to cover it starting next time, is there any evidence of more than one catastrophe that has taken place on this planet? They say no. This uniformitarianism means that all the plants and animals and the cycles of life through all the layers of geology show this uninterrupted process. And therefore, if you're going to believe that there was a big destruction and a recreation later, they're saying it's not supported by the geology. That is dead wrong. But let me get through these other two before I close up. Point number five, they say, no connection between geology and Genesis. Because, they say, Genesis involves a recreation, that's what the gap theorists believe, and the present-day fossils belong to a destroyed world, there can be no correlation between Scripture and geology. So they say. They say the Bible, therefore, has absolutely nothing to say about this subject. Therefore, it is entirely in the hands of geologists, and we of necessity must believe what they tell us about the geological record. That is also dead
false?
Does the Bible, I've already given you the scriptures about what the Bible says, and the interpretation of God's church, which was given by Jesus Christ through chosen servants to understand these pieces of what really happened. The question is there a geological substantiation, again, for more than one catastrophe? What are we talking about? They call it, the YECers call it Satan's flood. Okay. The flooding of the earth, the destruction of the surface that was a result of a satanic rebellion. We believe that's true. So let's call that Satan's flood, separate and apart from Noah's flood. Two catastrophes that happen. Is there a geologic history? They say it doesn't exist, and therefore, if you believe the geologists are right about the earth being millions of years old, you can't believe anything in the Bible. Not true. Again, our belief is that the good science and good evidence scientifically supports the truth of the Bible. Last point, just to finish this out, they say the gap theory discounts the Genesis flood. Okay, this is related. They say if the present-day fossils are a result of a Luciferic flood that happened between Genesis 1 and Genesis 1:2, then one must assume that Noah's flood left no trace whatsoever. That's what they say about what we believe. That's not true either. They say the fossil evidence can better be explained by a flood that we know existed rather than a flood which the scripture does not mention. So they're saying our belief in Satan's destruction of the original earth and flooding the entire world is fantasy, whereas a belief of the Bible, what it clearly says in Genesis concerning Noah's flood, is real. So whatever catastrophe evidence is in the geology happened at Noah's time and not potentially millions of years before man was on the earth. So that sets the stage. How do we answer those? Now we're getting into questions about geology. Is our contention as a part of our belief that good science supports the truth of the Bible? Can we substantiate that? What does the record of the earth actually show? Is there any evidence of support that there were not only one but two specific catastrophes upon this earth? We're going to dig into that next time.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented the 61st message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled, Just What Do You Mean Faith Once Delivered? Given in Eugene, Oregon, May 6th, 2023.